I will, but I will say a few words first.
Pardon?
Yeah, I'm going to say a few, things first, because I want to put this in the context of the research programme and to remind you of what we're trying to do with the research programme and what the stages are as the sort of background for this discussion. So the purpose of the research programme is to help the board gather evidence on nature and extent of financial reporting problems and assess potential ways to address them. And what we say in the published statements we've made so far is that the main output of the research programme is discussion papers or research papers. Now, discussion papers you're familiar with, you've done several of them, but you've not yet done a research paper, and so this is really the first time we're talking about something that might conceivably lead to a research paper. So I wanted to sort of set out a few things before we start that discussion. And I guess it's also worth reminding yourselves that the objective of a research project really is to see whether we're going to start a standards level project or not. We've distinguished two stages of the research programme, assessment stage projects and development stage projects. An assessment stage project is designed to identify and assess the practical application issues in order to understand whether there's a financial reporting problem and to consider what further action, if any, is needed. The likely output of that, I think, is that it would either move on then into a development stage or decide we would do nothing, or possibly move straight on into a standards setting project. I think that might depend a bit on the circumstances. The development stage projects are designed to assess whether the ISB can identify a solution to the problem we've identified and to describe what form that solution might take. And we've said that the likely output of a development stage project is a discussion paper. And obviously following that discussion paper, either we would add a project or not add a project, depending on where we've got to. So the project AIDA's working on discount rates, we've said, is in the assessment stage at this stage. So what we're trying to do is to summarise the results of AIDA's research so far, decide what we want to do with her findings, and see where we go from there. Now, because we've not done research papers before, I think there are a number of questions we'll need to address in thinking about that, not just for this particular project, but more generally for research projects. And I've got a few of them listed here, and I don't think we should be trying to answer those today, but I think there are a number of things we'll need to think about. For example, when do we want to publish our findings in some sort of formal form, as a discussion paper or research paper, whatever it might be? When do we want to just leave them there as board papers that are available on the website but maybe not so visible? If we do publish, do we want to ask people formal questions and have a comment deadline, or do we want to just leave them up there for people to respond to as and when? To what extent does the board want to take ownership of the research? Is it just going to put the research as is? Is it going to try and take ownership of the detail of the research? Is it going to include some sort of wraparound that's owned more by the board, with the underlying research being sort of owned more by the producer of the research? And in thinking about that, what we've said before is that the research is primarily probably going to be produced either by the staff or possibly in some cases by national standard setters as well. And it might well be that for all of these questions, there's not a single answer that's going to fit every case. We might have different answers for different cases. If we ask questions, are they embedded in the document itself or would they be in a separate wraparound? And one other thing about the board approval process is that the due process handbook is clear that discussion papers are approved by the board and balloted by the board. The due process handbook says that research papers would need to be approved by the board in a public meeting. It doesn't contain any reference to balloting, and so I think the inference is we don't necessarily need to ballot a research paper, which means I think we might or might not, or it might depend on the circumstances. Now, as I said, I don't think we can answer all those questions today, but I think those are the kind of questions we'll need to think about when we think about whether to publish something, and if so, in what kind of form. The last thing I wanted to mention is the interrelationship with the agenda consultation, because ideally what we'd like to do with research projects is put a bit more information out in public to the extent we can, to help respond to the agenda consultation understand as best they can what we're reporting on. Now, obviously, on AIDA's project, the papers are now public, they're available, but of course, to get to those people need to be fairly familiar with our processes, and it takes a bit of digging. So I think one question is, if we did decide to publish, what might the timing be, and how would that interact with the agenda consultation? Well, I think even on the most optimistic assumption, even if you like everything in the paper and think it's sort of ready to go, it would still be several weeks, I think, before we could put it out in a published form. So the reality is it would be pretty close to the comment deadline, even on the most optimistic assumptions. So I think the likelihood is we wouldn't be able to publish something much before the comment deadline for the gender consultation, and that would be on an optimistic scenario. So I think in terms of thinking about whether you want to publish something and when, it's most likely really to be after the agenda consultation, I think.
Even if we have another 30 days?
On the current timing for the agenda consultation.
Yeah. But although not published, paper 15B is in the public domain.
That's right.
In that sense, the thoughts as they developed up through the drafting of this paper are out there.
It's there, but clearly, if we had published something, it would be more directly
more prominent. I understand.
Yeah,
but it is out there.
Yeah. Did anybody want to make any general comments on that before I hand over to AIDA?
I think that's a really good list of things we have to think about in terms of research papers and where they fit in. And I understand and agree that we shouldn't try to answer them today. And it's really good to have a live research paper draft in front of us in terms of thinking about these things rather than answering them in the abstract. I do have a first reaction that I'll throw out, which is to think of research papers as standalone owned by staff, and that to me suggests not putting them out requesting views, getting feedback, because that then implies both a feedback statement and a final version and lots more as opposed to something that's put out there to capture, provoke discussion, provide a basis for next steps. And I think that a very natural follow-on question for any research paper, as we think about research papers, is should we issue a request for, a request for information or request for views or something like that? But I think we make that a separate question, a separate document, so that if we do issue it, we issue it in the decision that we focus the questions on what we want to ask about. And
I think you're getting a bit into what the discussion will be when they
bring
this back. Right. We don't want to get into details.
Okay. No, it's the separation in terms of comments that shapes my comments on what the paper is in terms of what it's trying to accomplish. And I think if it's a snapshot of what we know and think now, and to then inform what we do.
Yeah, maybe just to follow up on that, I think in terms of thinking about whether we put something out and if so, whether we ask questions about it, I think it's worth bearing in mind what the objective is, which is to look to the next stage of work and are we going to move into a development stage or possibly something else, or are we going to say we don't need to do any more? And if so, do we want to collect any external feedback on that before the board makes that decision?
Yeah, I just wanted to, do we need to insert something or amend our due process handbook for these research papers in terms of the protocol of what goes into them, the questions that we ask, the expectations of who owns them, and all that kind of good stuff? I went back and looked at it. It's not covered, and I'm just curious. We're raising these questions now in this discussion. Can we actually do that without?
Well, I think what's in the due process handbook is flexible, and I suspect it's deliberately flexible. And I think we'd need a little bit of experience of working with it before we tried to sort of crystallize what we might want to do. Because with all these things, there's likely to be some trial and error involved, I would think.
We've got a live document in front of us. Peter's raised all the issues, and we said we're not going to decide on them today. So I think we should go through the paper today. We should allow them to bring back these issues and have a full discussion on them. Whenever time's right for that, and then decide how we move forward.
Well, I take that as a permission to move on to
detailed of the exciting topic of present value measurements and discount rates. So as Peter said, today is a bit of an experiment, and therefore we, all of us working on assessment stage projects in research, are excited by this to hear what you have to say about what we've been doing. And what we have in front of us today is three papers on present value measurements, discount rates, and I'm going to refer to this project as discount rates from now on because it's just simpler, even though the full name is not that. So we have three papers, 15A, B, and C. Paper 15A is for your benefit. It provides a very high-level overview of the findings from the research, and it also has discussion about the immediate next steps, which discusses things that Peter was mentioning and Mary and Pat were discussing briefly. And if you agree, I would propose to focus our discussion today on the paper 15A. But we also have a draft research paper that is attached to the documents, which is in papers 15B and 15C. And normally, it is not our practice to submit draft papers, draft potential consultative documents in meetings like this, but because, as Peter said, it is the first time we are doing this and it is a bit of experiment, we thought it would be good to just bring it out and, you know, hear your comments and feedback. So I would suggest that at the end of the session we spend a little bit of time where I ask you for your comments and suggestion and a general impression of this research paper. So why are we doing this project at all? Maybe good to remind ourselves. So in 2011 agenda consultation, we had about 50 comment letters that said the reasons that IFRS use different discount rates and different standards are not well understood, that these differences cause IFRS requirements to be inconsistent, and that the ISB should do something about it. And this is why we started this project, and the objective of the project is to identify those inconsistencies and also assess whether those inconsistencies cause financial reporting problems and whether they should be addressed by the ISB. So did we find any inconsistency in this research program? Well, yes, we did. We found many. But some inconsistency we found in staff's view, they could be justified. So for example, if you have a measurement that has objective of historical cost versus measurement that is on current value basis, then I think it's quite understandable that they would use different discount rates. Similarly, there were some inconsistencies that on face of it looked like problems, but upon maybe closer look, they didn't seem to create real problems in practice. For example, sometimes the way we use time value of money could be seen as inconsistent, but the detailed guidance we have is really explanatory enough so that we don't think it causes problems. But after we deduct these two, we are still left with quite a big list of inconsistencies that in our view could create financial reporting problems. So I'll just give you a few examples. First one is, why is the effect of time value of money not reflected in all IFRS measurements and relevant? And just to give you an example of consequence of this, is that say if you're purchasing a company that has significant deferred tax liability, which we know is not permitted to be discounted, and on business combination we are not permitted to fair value it, we might end up recognizing bargain purchase gain, which never occurred, or in a better case scenario, we might end up undervaluing the acquired goodwill. You know, that is one of the consequences of not recognizing time value of money. Another question we ask ourselves is why in most standards that use present value measurements, that is entity specific, why is there no explicit measurement objective? And just to give you an example of the problem this creates, say in IAS 19, which is quite rules-based, we have a constant stream of requests to interpretation committee because rules just call for more rules without a principle. Another problem with IAS 19 is that we have found that there are 76 jurisdictions in the world that don't have bonds. They don't have government bonds, they don't have corporate bonds. Most of those are small islands, to be granted, and they don't really apply IFRS or have big companies, but some of them are, and some of them are bigger countries that are actually considering adoption of IFRS in the near future, and they are saying we're actually not sure once we adopt, or if we adopt IFRS, how are we going to apply IAS 19 as of today. Another question is, why is it not always clear which components are included in specific entity-specific present value measurements? So just to give you two examples of consequences of this, one is that there is actually divergence in accounting manuals for Big Four audit firms as to whether risk is a part of the measurement of provisions in IAS 37. They actually say different things when you read their manuals. Another thing is that there is a perception that the entity-specific or entity perspective in the measurement of value in use in IAS 36 allows room for opportunistic behavior. And this is maybe, I'll give you an example of what ESMA found is that in 2011, 53% of companies that had a book value of their equity in excess of the market value, they did not recognize any impairment at all. And all of those companies used value in use concept. So maybe there is some problem there. And finally, why do we seem to have every possible permutation of presentation and disclosure requirements in different entity-specific measurements? And give you one example of the effects of this is that investors often have to make adjustments. And one example that is most often quoted or that I hear of is adjustments relating to presentation of interest expense on pension liabilities. So in total, we have identified 12 potential financial reporting problems that arise due to inconsistencies in present value measurements. And these are summarized in table that is on page 5 of agenda paper 15A. Now, this inconsistency in staff's view, or you know, my view, I'm the only staff here, they are actually not all intentional, I think, because they are. I think some of them are simply consequences of standards being developed independently of each other and at different times. And I would dare to say that to some extent you can compare them to inconsistencies we had in fair value before IFRS 13 was issued. And I think this leads me to pose one overarching question, which is, given that we have one fair value that is used in different standards, but you know it is arrived at using the same set of methods, followed by same disclosure requirements, to what extent is it desirable or possible to have a similar consistency for entity-specific measurements? And I say this is overarching question, but it is not a question I'm asking you now, and it is not a question I think should be addressed as a part of this project at this stage, because I think this is more a question for you to discuss in the context of conceptual framework. But of course it is relevant because the answer to that question would then depend on how we move forward to some inconsistencies. And I would just like to emphasize that consistency of application and interpretation is one of the four strategic objectives of the IFRS Foundation for the next 3 years. And in my view, it's very hard to achieve consistency of application if we don't have consistency in standards themselves. So with that, I'm just going to pause and ask for any comments or questions on the actual issues, not on the research paper itself, before I move on to questions for you on the next steps.
Amara. I'm not sure if I'm asking this at the right moment, and you're free to comment on late. I looked for reference. We had quite a long discussion of these ideas during one day in the Emerging Economies group. Yeah. And I personally think that the discussion was quite interesting, considering the composition of the group. Last week, while in Chile doing outreach on conceptual framework, Chileans brought again the issue of discount rates. I'm talking about a region where interest rates can range from 1% to 15%, in some countries 30%. And companies that are operating within the region, they have to discount using distinct rates. So since you didn't mention anything in this set of papers about the initial reaction of that group, and if at some point you could bring this to us and share with everyone their initial thinking, I think would be interesting.
Thank you. It's perhaps not very clear, Amaro. I have sought to include it, and this is paper 2C, which is...
No, I know. You included in the research itself, in the draft, but you didn't mention in 15A, particularly when you mentioned here about research methodology, you just mentioned that mainly desktop study.
Yeah.
And you actually, it was one day intensive outreach with them, so that's why I think it's important.
Understand.
Yeah.
Sue?
I must say I don't feel fully equipped to be as helpful as I might want to be on this, because I feel like I haven't been on the journey with you in the same way that we usually would be when we're sort of seeing drafts of documents that may be potentially produced with a 30 Cannon Street banner on the front. So, and maybe that's just a general observation in terms of our involvement in the process and then suddenly getting this type of paper, but that's where we are. In terms of the sort of general question, and I'll link it back to the example, couple of examples you gave, so this fact that we have an overarching objective for the measurement for IFRS 13 that then sort of turns up consistently everywhere. And I must say that when I read the paper, I was a little bit unclear in terms of what exactly the scope was, because sometimes you talk about entity-specific current value measurements, which makes me think about things like value and use, fulfillment values, and sometimes you talk about current entity-specific measurements, which to me sounds more all-encompassing and might include something like amortized cost for financial instruments, as well as more current measurement-based present value techniques. But if it is the more all-encompassing one, if it's sort of cost-based, present value-based measurements and current ones, for me, I think it would be difficult to maybe have one overarching objective, because we're sort of shooting for different things in different contexts, which is different to IFRS 13, where we're always aiming for a market participant's exit price. We've got a common anchor, whereas we use present value to try and get to different things, and so I'm not sure we could ever come up with a consistent objective unless we only mean current entity-specific.
Yeah, the commons was only...
Okay,
yeah.
And that's not at all clear to me based on the draft.
Okay.
The other general question I had was, and IAS 19 is an example that you use a lot, and so I'll use that to sort of raise my niggling concern. And I think what we're trying to get at here is having consistency in the way that we shoot for these measurements. So are we using a consistent sort of logic when we think about what should make up the discount rates, the present value techniques, the presentation and disclosure, and I think that's a good objective for consistency for us for standard setting. But I guess I have a question about interaction with other projects, and I guess a sort of risk concern, and that's that if I go out and talk to people on the street who prepare financial statements today about IAS 19, they all hate IAS 19 at the moment, not necessarily because they are confused about what it asks them to do, but because they don't like discounting at such low discount rates in this market environment. And my concern is, even though our objective is to get feedback on present value techniques, I don't know how simple it's going to be for us to separate that reaction from a I don't like IAS 19 type reaction, and we've already got an IAS 19 type project ongoing. So it's not a criticism of you, it's more from an entity perspective, how do we make sure that if we issue a paper like this with questions, we actually get feedback on the thing we want people to talk to us about and not have a reaction that's the discount rate in IAS 19 just don't work and, you know, we need to use averages and things, which isn't conceptual. It's more a reaction to the environment and very project specific.
I mean, this is clear risk for you as board members to decide on, but just on IAS 19 feedback, what I found interesting is that investors, and I have to say I spoke to very few of them because we decided to do limited outreach, those I spoke to, they said they really like IAS 19 rates, and they said, oh, you know, we like it because, you know, it is market-based rates, and then speaking to preparers, when I gave them this feedback from investors, they're like, what, they must be joking, we do so many things to it, it's nowhere near market-based rate, don't they see this? So that is just what I've heard, but clearly the question, the important question of risk.
I think we're going to risk going headlong into a volatility debate instead of a present value technique debate.
Pat.
I'm very impressed with all the work that you've done here, and it's I think it's quite helpful because of its timing. And the timing I'm thinking of is in the context of the conceptual framework discussions, and in particular around measurement. It strikes me that the comment made in paragraph 5 is really at the crux of what we're talking about here. IFRS uses a mixed measurement model, and thus the use of different discount rates and different cash flows for different measurements is justified. I guess that's a matter of opinion. But I think when you look at the table on page 5, in my mind, that table reinforces the complexity and, in fact, how obtuse the financial position and financial performance of a reporting entity is for users of financial statements, because it's essentially reinforces that you have a potpourri. It is, you know, an incredible smorgasbord of options. And we wrote a paper, and I just called it up on my iPad back, and maybe even Ms. Suzanne Lloyd was one of the authors, I'm not sure, Reducing Complexity in Reporting Financial Instruments, published September 19th, 2008.
Not so
7 years ago. Maybe Mr. Gavin Francis or okay. In this document, there's a suggestion that I think that we should heed. Unfortunately, I don't necessarily think it was taken as seriously as I would like it. But in the world of standard setting, we make progress in inches. Okay, it's a glacial pace in my view, and This document suggested that there are long-term solutions and short-term solutions to reducing the number of measurement categories. I agree. And I think what we should try to achieve in this research process is getting feedback, and I'll come to that's another point I want to make, getting feedback on whether or not we want to, in fact, reduce this list from 12 to, say, 5. Reduce complexity in financial reporting by creating more uniformity in things that really shouldn't be different. There should be no justification for different measurements, except other than the fact that, you know, that was the way it was done and the way I'd like it to continue to be done. I don't want change. So that's one question, one point. In paragraph 23, it seems we make a statement that seems quite odd to me. And it seems odd because since this project would ensure present value measurements are performed correctly, it seems odd that we would ignore this research and feedback before completing the conceptual framework project. So in my mind, we can't just march ahead with the conceptual framework and ignore all the good findings that you're uncovering here in this project. To me, it just perpetuates weaknesses in the current framework. That doesn't make any sense. I think you should request views. To me, it's an opportunity loss. So in answer to the points being made in 26 and 27, there's no question in my mind. We should also ask people how to fix them, get their opinions. We don't have to give our preliminary views, but I think we should ask them how we should fix them. Because measurement complexity, I think, is probably the number one thing that causes financial reporting to be as difficult and challenging it is, and the availability of tools that exist today that didn't exist when these original concepts of cost, you know, were promulgated, I think eliminate a lot of the challenges. But the market doesn't want to, or certain parts of the market doesn't want to accept that for certain, you know, proprietary reasons. I think if we're going to be a leader here in terms of advancing the thought process in financial reporting, we have to simplify this. We can't continue to perpetuate, you know, a measurement category du jour.
Thanks, Pat. You raised an interesting point on the conceptual framework, and it's referred to a few times in this document, but paragraph 14 and 17, 14 sort of says, we've got to fix this up in the framework before we can fix it in this, and then 17 says, here's some things that should be addressed in the conceptual framework. Now, I don't know if I'm just a pessimist, but in 17, I don't think we'll address all those issues in the conceptual framework as we're taking it forward, and particularly if we want to finish it next year. So we've somehow got to balance our thinking between this project and the conceptual framework, which is your point.
Yeah. Why do you have to finish it next year? What's the urgency? If you can articulate a cogent argument for me, I'm all ears. But
Well, the cogent argument I would bring forward is that if we don't have some sort of deadline, then it'll run on for 15 years. That's really my argument. There's always topics you can keep adding to the conceptual framework project. So I think that's something we have to think about in what we say in this research paper. Waigu.
I just want to give a very general comment because it is so big document, you know, hard to comment on a particular small area. I give a very high remark on this document for three reasons. First, it is very comprehensive, what we need. And secondly, it is a thorough, you know. And thirdly, it is done by one staff. It's quite cost effective, no? So we should run business this way in the
bring
future.
Bring insurance back to one step.
Yeah. we should run business this way. You know, I think there are a few cases. The less staff, the better. You know, another example is Michelle.
I agree, Wegwo. If you allow me to write all the standards, I get you. They'll all be done within two years at most.
And then one
You won't need to defer.
One board member.
There'll be no deferrals needed.
No chairmans.
Don't need board members. Okay, well, good.
Yeah, I think it is quite good. But I think the fundamental problems for the board members and for our constituency is, you know, what we can get, how should we progress in the future. These are the key, you know. I don't want to give answer now because, you know, it is so comprehensive, it's hard to comment, you know. We all busy at different projects. But as a basis, I like it very much. I feel every time if we have comprehensive cyber investigation come out to very good results, the next step will be relatively easier. For example, when I went out to have outreach on conceptual framework, people give relatively high remarks on 37 related liability side. The reason is John Brown did very solid and thorough investigations. It was done by only one staff. So I think, you know, on this basis, we can gain a lot in the future.
Okay, Philippe.
Thanks. In the conceptual framework, we have a pretty good discussion of the relationship between measurement and uncertainty. But it's mostly about uncertainty in the amounts of the cash flows and not much about the timing of the cash flows. And to me, the issue of discounting has a relationship with uncertainty in the timing. And historically, although we don't have a clear principle, it seems to me that in many instances, we have been requesting discounting when there was a sufficient degree of certainty in the timing, and not requesting or preventing discounting when there was too much uncertainty in the timing of cash flows, right? So I think this element of the relationship of discounting present value with uncertainty in timing needs to be a bit more developed to give us guidance for the future. And I think this project is a good opportunity to investigate the relationship between timing of cash flows and discounting, and then maybe to bring it back to the framework at a later stage.
Mary?
I really I really admire sitting down with a blank sheet of paper and thinking about, you know, a topic and how you approach it. And I think specifically on discount rates and more generally on how do we do research papers. And I think I'm about to try and hold this project to an unfairly high standard because it's, you know, one of the first ones that will set the template for what we do. And my first encouragement, thinking about the questions and the way it approaches it, is I would actually say let's scale back the ambitions and the extent. A couple things I noted, you know, thinking about paper 15A and some of the other material is it says discount rates, shorthand, but it actually is very much about measurement bases. Mm-hmm. You know, so it expanded from the issue that we wanted to identify consistency or inconsistency about. And I think that's what gives some of the crossover with conceptual framework, other projects, other standards. It's not that measurement bases are, you know, out of bounds. And I think, you know, discount rate discussion does, in this context, often happen, you know, maybe always in the context of measurement base. But I think the question we should start with is discount rates, and there's a fundamental question of fact that I think should be brought to the forefront as the first objective of this paper, which is, are we consistent or inconsistent in our use of discount rates in the standards? And this is not detailed comments on the draft standards. I just want to use something that's in there as an example. Just before paragraph 149, there's a table that takes five standards and says, you know, what does this say about certain aspects of discount rates? And to me, a research paper on discount rates would start with an enumeration of, you know, what do we say in each standard about this, and do it in a very disciplined, complete process and put those findings forward. Because I think if you look at the table in 15A, that we're talking about and that you referred to on page 5, it's offering commentary about consequences and where there may be inconsistent, you know, whether this would need conceptual framework, individual standard, cross-cutting issues to address. And I think our ambitions for a research paper, maybe at least the first iteration, would be a fact-finding mission that says, you know, what discount rates do we use in each standard? Are they consistent or inconsistent on their face? If they're inconsistent on their face, is there a reason offered for their inconsistency that, you know, kind of takes that potential inconsistency off the list? And then once we've kind of digested that, we can then think about what the next step is. And I think because this tries to put all of it in one go, it makes it quite long, and it brings in a lot of relationships with other things, and we may get some of the kind of, it isn't false positive, but the kind of reactions Sue talked about initially, about people reacting to the outcome or the accounting model or the measurement-based decision, rather than providing feedback on the specific issue of discount rate. So overall encouragement is to think about getting this much narrower and focused, and also more data-based in terms of marching through each thing and laying it out. And then we can start thinking about what are the next steps and if that's a problem.
Are you suggesting then that there should be two research papers?
I don't know. I don't know because, and this kind of comes to what, how do we use a research paper and what do we do next? But I think if we put out something along this scale and scope, that we will get input about which discount rate should you use. We'll get input about have you got the right measurement basis. We'll get crossover to decisions in a lot of other standards as opposed to us having the facts all assembled in one place. If we have the facts all assembled in one place, we could then think about what questions we want to ask about those consistencies or inconsistencies. And the other thing I'd warn about is once you say let's talk about an issue, everybody brings out their problems and talks about how you can solve them, but you don't do it in the context of, but how big a problem is this overall, and do you make it the number one thing you do, drop everything else and fix this, or do you work it in it as it comes along? Because you're talking in the context of this issue, now that we all get focused on it, what do you do? As opposed to stepping back and saying, where do I put that in the overall scheme of things? So again, I'd say narrower, and Ian, to your question of does that mean that every research has, you know, two phases? No, but this one was a data-specific request in the first place. The input was, we are inconsistent in our use of discount rates, and that makes consistent application, you know, repeating what Aida said about the feedback that prompted this project, that makes difficulties in implementation, hard to answer questions when you don't have the data that the rule there requires because you don't trace back. So the first question was, are we inconsistent? How inconsistent are we? What explanations do we have for that inconsistency? And I don't feel like I could answer those questions. I have a lot more thoughts about measurement base, what we could do to address them, and what people like and don't like and perceive to be problems, but I don't have the fundamental starting point.
They're here, though, right? The fundamental starting point's in this paper. 15B.
I didn't find, I found pieces of them, but I didn't find them all, and I don't know that it's complete.
You wanted to say
just can I just interject a question, Larry?
Just the way you first again. He's also questioning.
Yeah, Mary, you know, at the beginning, I feel the drafted paper seems expanded much more broadly than the original plan. But by the end, I accept. It's because if you said we want to find inconsistency in discount rate, for example, in this case, you have, you know, the own credit in another case not. And then, of course, you see they are different. But if you're not linked to measurement basis, then how can you answer the question? You know, for example, insurance, we said it is current value and entity based, but you should take into consideration the market as much as possible. Therefore, we said, you know, you should use, you know, market rate and such circumstances. But on the other hand, we said not include, you know, on credit for some reason. So I don't think, you know, totally ignore measurement basis will give you, we can discuss, you know, the difference without taking into consideration of measurement basis. Also, without taking into consideration market or, you know, the entity. So this is the reason why by the end I accept, but even though it's much bigger pictures, but I think I accept.
Right, but
promise Philippe John.
Yeah, but my point is about the same. To have consistency in the application of the discounting, we must make a relationship to the basic measurement objective, whether it is an exit value or a fulfillment value. And I think we have basically maybe two classes of discounting there, one, the ones that apply to exit value and the ones that apply to fulfillment values. And probably the ones are more market-based and the ones more entity-specific. And also, going back to my previous point, can we have consistency in the application of the discounting methodology if we don't have a clear basis about whether or not to discount, when to discount, when not to discount? I think if we are not clear as to the reason why we discount and the conditions for that, it might be difficult to be more consistent in the application of the method.
Could I just make one comment on Mary's comments as well? Because I think this project is probably not typical, because I think if the board does decide to do something further, there are various different ways it could go forward. Because you could look at discount rates on a cross-cutting basis, for example, or a cross-cutting basis for a number of standards, or you could look at them in individual standards as you come across them. And we have separate projects on research projects on most of the standards that are covered in detail here, so pensions, IS37, and possibly impairments as well. And so I think thinking about where the board would go next with this, if it does anything, it'll be not only deciding whether to do something, but also when and in what sequence and how. And that's a difficult set of questions to try and answer, I think.
Jacob, why don't you? Stephen.
So I like the paper. I think you've done a great job, Ada, on this. I think it's a complex issue. I think you're raising the right issues. You're pointing out the right inconsistencies. I think the link to measurement is inevitable. It's complex. There are cross-cutting issues. So it's difficult to do this in a narrow way, in a data-specific way. I think it's inevitable this is going to become wider. My concern, though, is that the board hasn't discussed it. Are we going to get an opportunity to? I've got a specific issue with the risk premium section. Don't agree with some of the assertions in there. So what's going to happen? And under whose name is this going to go out? Is it going to be a board document? If so, I'd like to have an opportunity to talk about risk premium.
Can I respond to Steve, or just a comment on what Mary said? I'm glad you mentioned that table, paragraph 149, because that table was, I think Peter will remember, was the very first thing I did when I started this research. Was like, let's just do inventory list. But then, you know, it was very hard, you know, compare against what, unless you take a step, you know, a higher step and actually see what are we trying to achieve with those measurements. Because if you're trying to achieve different things, then we shouldn't be really comparing them in the same way. And this was also a very, very strong message at ASAF, because our very first meeting with ASAF, which was now over a year ago, Dave said, I've kind of tried to approach, I said, I'm going to do this narrower scope, and I was just beginning feeling my way. I had this table, which I presented to them, and there was a big, big pushback, similar comments to what I'm hearing from Philippe Wego and Steve, like, you cannot possibly consider this. I mean, starting from a simple things like, you know, risk adjustment you're mentioning, risk can be adjusted sometimes in the rate, sometimes in the cash flow. So first, you can't look at discount rates without looking at the cash flow. And then second is the whole question of measurement. But what we decided then is that this project is certainly not attempting to answer the question, is the measurement objective right? And you might have noticed that the table on page 5 or 15A is actually not saying measurement is wrong, always talking about clarity. And it's really about clarity. Is it clear what it is? And if it is clear, you know, is it comparable with others that are explained in the same way? So that is certainly recognized as something that is within the scope of conceptual framework. On your question on the next step, I mean, just from the staff perspective, the way we envisaged this, that even, you know, today you say, yes, in principle, we agree for this to go as research paper, it wouldn't be the end of it. We would produce another draft based on comments today, and we will give you opportunity to review that draft, and to the extent, because Peter mentioned there's no formal requirement to ballot, so it could be like, okay, Steve has comments, we will have a, you know, comments from Steve, but maybe we don't need to have everybody give us comments, and this is maybe something for you to decide what you feel comfortable with, how you wish to proceed, but certainly we have envisaged giving you another opportunity to give detailed comments, which may be done outside board meeting, right, Peter, there's a more efficient way.
But is that drafting comments?
Well, I think at this stage, it's obviously in the hands of the board to decide what the next step would be anyway. So if you felt that it was a stage where we could go into a drafting exercise, we'd go into that. If you feel that we need to discuss some of the points more substantially with the board, we'll obviously need to bring those back.
Okay. Gary.
Thank you. Peter and Ada, I actually thought this was a very good paper, and my instincts tell me before it's done, it's going to be longer rather than shorter. I think the subject is difficult. It's cross-cutting over many standards and other business areas. So I think I would err on the side a little bit longer rather than a little bit shorter. The way I look at it, I sort of see kind of two overarching issues that maybe they're in here and maybe they're not, but if they are in here, they're at least clear enough to me, is the question is, how do you actually discount, or is it why to use different rates in different situations? And I think people that need to know how to discount, you know how to discount, it's cash flows, times a discount rate. I mean, so I don't think the issue is how to discount. I think the issue is why do we have so many different rates under, you know, for different assets and liabilities and events. And I think the other overarching question sort of builds on that, which is the paper doesn't develop enough, at least to my way of thinking, is regardless of which discount rate one picks, there's any number of financial statement elements that are not discounted, deferred taxes, as you pointed out, but there's others. I think it needs a more robust discussion of when do you discount versus when do you not, irrespective of how or what measurement rate you pick. That doesn't come through here clear. And it's easy. IAS 19 is very clear, tells you what rate to use. But that's it's not always so clear. And what's a risk-free rate? You know, what's a market rate? And so on. And a lot of knowledgeable experts can reasonably disagree on it. I think there's probably two other things to consider putting in, but I don't know if it's necessary. You know, today we have negative interest rates. That is not mentioned in here. Is that an present valuing issue, or is it something unrelated in it? And it should be out of scope, but I think it's sort of conspicuous by its absence that it's not in there. I mean, I wouldn't lay in the tracks if it's not, but it's just an observation having read it. And I think the same thing about when are market rates so influenced by central bank actions. I mean, you look at the major central banks, where interest rates are functionally zero. It's because the central bank is intervening in the marketplace, and no one would actually have, you know, an arm's length rate as low as it is, you know, whether it's qualitative easing or whatever else. So again, I don't know, we're not trying to make this a treatise on term structure of interest rates, but it's just an observation. Maybe it should be in there. And then lastly, I agree with Pat's suggestion, Sue's, you know, paper from many years ago about the need to reduce complexity in there. I'm not suggesting how to do it, but you've got 12 different interest rates in here identified, at least in your table, and I suspect there's more. So I think if we're gonna ask questions in it, we need to ask what are your suggestions to reduce complexity or the totality of the number of rates, you know, that are in vogue. And like some other people here, I think I'd like to see another draft of it, because I think we need to be careful if you're either expressing an organizational opinion or view, or at least could be read that you're expressing an organizational opinion or view. We strip it out, or we should have a discussion.
Martin.
Yeah, I first have to say it's really a good paper, good research. But really the question is what we are doing with that, and I think that's the main question. And I also think, like Gary, I think we maybe need, before we do anything, a better discussion if we all agree if the identified issues, I would call it issues, are really inconsistencies, because maybe not everybody agrees, for example, that deferred taxes should be discounted, because what Philip said, maybe that is uncertainty of timing of this deferred taxes is so high that, okay, we don't like to discount, and also not to fair value. That's the same kind of same problem, because maybe I don't know if anybody has really fair values for deferred taxes. I have not seen them. And so many issues where I think, okay, also related to the measurement basis, because maybe there is not in a standard mentioned a measurement objective, but maybe the board at that time had a specific objective, and therefore was a reason why they have used a discount rate and not another. And maybe the simplifications, maybe it was what is discussing currently IAS 17 and IAS 19, why we using corporate bond rates, that was a reason for that. And I think without a more thorough discussion, do we really think that is our inconsistencies to decide what we should do with this paper? For me is very, very difficult, because I would not, also for them, I would not agree to, we have inconsistency. Maybe it is a consequence of, in one regard, of a measurement basis. And to solve all that, I think what is then the step after that, even if we would then ask people, okay, about their thoughts, well, what next? Do we then want to address all that? And so it is really difficult to decide now, because I think we first
maybe have to discuss, okay, do we really agree with all this inconsistency, or we use this paper when we come to this standards, then we using this research and saying, okay, do we have to address it, yes or no? But as a comprehensive manner now to bring that to the public and ask for this view, I'm also with you, then we're getting back all discussion of currently of low interest rate, what does it mean for IAS 19, for negative interest rate, all this kind of discussion, and then what is the next step with it? What we are doing with it, that is. And before we have a clearer picture, I think it is difficult to decide what we should do with it.
Sure. I'd agree with what Martin said, because I think even if it goes out as a staff paper, the fact that it comes out of this building provides an impression that we at least don't disagree with what's in here. So I think it would be good, and in support of the staff, really, to have a board discussion to agree on what the issues are identified in the paper. Do we agree that they should be even presented as issues or not? And certainly I feel I would benefit from hearing other board members' views on the issues rather than doing that through a sort of drafting process. So I think that would be a better approach.
I could sort of summarise that, because I think there's a bit of consensus coming. And if you go back to paper 15, paragraph 3 says, what's the immediate next step? And paragraph 4 says, I'm not going to ask you what the steps are after that. But it seems to me the immediate next step should be to bring the discussion, the research paper back for a general discussion by the board. Mm-hmm. And after we've had that discussion, then we can start talking about what are the steps, how it should be dealt with, whether it's staff or board, whether, you know, all those questions. Would people be happy with that?
Yeah, and bring it in portions, not just...
Well, if I may, during the Emerging Economies Group, I either made an educational session mainly with a set of slides that went through each session. I went through the set of slides again before reading the paper, and I found it very helpful because the paper is quite long.
Yeah.
So I would suggest, if I may, an educational session, use a set of slides of something similar that you have used before, as a main of introduction, introducing the research as a whole for all of us. It's quite long paper.
The only warning I'd give on that is that session took all day.
Yeah, of course. But as Martin just mentioned, bring it in portions. So the education would be a good way for us to start identifying which section would be interesting to explore further.
One question that always comes to my mind when we deal with discount rates, and we have all these subtle differences between discount rates, what kind of meaningful precision are we reaching? Knowing that discount rates can be kind of volatile, can change very quickly over time, and then we have these tiny little differences between discount rates, but highly uncertain measurements. How meaningful is it to have these small differences?
Yeah.
Would it be better to work with rough and ready measures?
Yeah, but those tiny differences, Hans, mean a difference between impairment and no impairment. They mean a difference between bargain purchase gain and goodwill.
You suggest the board discussions,
you know, jointly. But I'm not sure, you know, how should we distinguish between two different kind of issues? Totally different. One is identify the difference, whether we agree with description by AIDA. Such a description of difference is right or not. The second question is whether board members agree with such a difference. I think totally different endeavor.
Mm.
I would agree the first one rather than second, because if we want to do the second, it will be time consuming and I don't think it will be achievable.
I think at this stage we're only trying to identify what's there. We're not trying to decide what to do with the differences we find.
Yeah,
I don't disagree with where we're heading with this, but I do think it has some fairly significant longer term things, because essentially I had always thought that this part of the research process was something of a data gathering, and the intent was that board time would be very limited in dealing with it. If we follow the suggestion that we're talking about now, I think we're probably talking not just a single meeting, but multiple meetings in doing that.
Yeah.
And that does then mean that the very early stages of research project, I mean, the idea is that this is the pre-discussion paper process, is now going to be something not just for this project, but if we follow this going forward for other projects, is going to then become a significant user of board time. And I just don't know whether that is the right use of board time in
that
sort of process.
Yeah, I think you've got an assumption there, though, that this is pre-discussion paper. I'm not sure we've decided that even.
Also
so,
true.
You know, we're not... And so it just occurred to me that if we look... And I think Wagyu made a good point. We've got to be careful on how we review the paper and limit it. As I say, it goes a little bit back to Mary's original suggestion. But I think we have to, I mean, the alternative is to say, well, let it go, give some drafting suggestions to AEDA and call it a staff paper. But I'm not sure on an important subject like this that that's a satisfactory way to go forward.
Another possibility is it might depend on which way the board decides to go. So if the board says, yes, there's an issue here and we want to start thinking about what to do with it at the next stage, you might go into that without publishing something, getting public comment back. If you said, we don't think there's an issue, we're going to not do any more work on this, then it's possible you might want to expose that conclusion to see whether people have any objection on that. So it might be that until you've had the sort of deeper discussion that you're looking for, that you might not be ready yet to decide whether you want to put something out at this stage.
That's what I think.
Yeah.
Mary.
And I was just going back to Wiglow's last set of comments, where you said there are two questions you can ask. And the first one is more factual in terms of, not just do you agree that this is a correct description, but do you agree that there is or isn't an inconsistency in the context? And maybe, without saying that that's the limit of the paper, maybe that's the first thing we try and have a discussion around, and then based on where I'm not capturing what you said, Wei Guo, quite right, but if we focus our first discussion on what the question Wei Guo posed that he thought we could and should be answering, we can then figure out what we need to do on top of that in terms of, does it leave us saying we wouldn't want to go out with that because where does that leave people, or does it say, okay, this is something we put out for...
I mean, the difficulty will be in limiting the discussion because people will be tempted.
No, as I say, there are two totally different questions.
Yeah.
One is, I either investigated, find the difference, then the board agree with the discussion. I think to do work, I will agree with, you know, we're not in, you know, have exhaustive discussions. Another one is whether you agree with such a difference, it's a totally different story. Should have this, you know, element or not, it's a totally different story.
That's what we're all saying. We agree with you, Wagyu.
Yeah. I'm saying focus on question one. The board's first discussion should focus on question one.
Yes.
And then we can figure out what we...
Yes.
Yeah. Confirming we agree with your conclusions on the issues that are flagged, yeah?
Okay. All right. So all right.